Good morning and welcome to the Performance Review and Scrutiny Committee meeting. We have one apology for Councillor Peter De Vink. Are there any other apologies? Okay, orderly business as per the agenda. Any declarations of interest? None. Okay, we'll have the minutes of the meeting of the 29th of April, 4th of June and 4th of June. Are we agreed to the correct record? Yep. Thank you. Any matters arising? None. Again, thank you. Move on to item 5, inspection of Midlothian residential services for young people. Mary,
thank you. Okay, thank you. This inspection took place in March 2014, and it was an unannounced inspection. And as you can see from the grades, the quality of care and support is good, quality of environment good, quality of staffing good, and at that point, the quality of management and leadership was adequate. The inspectors awarded grades of very good for service users' health and well-being, and ensuring that the environment is safe and service users are protected, and having a professional, trained and motivated workshop. The inspectors noted that we could do better in the following areas. The management team should develop systems to demonstrate quality assurance and self-assessment, and how they identify areas for improvement and progress. And the service needs to fully roll out the new care plan process. So we're asking that the content of the inspection report pass this report to performance review and scrutiny, acknowledge a positive ongoing work, and note that the Council will continue to challenge and support services.
Thanks, Mary. Questions or comments? Margot.
Thanks, Chair. Just to comment on Dalkeith House using in a different way than that was envisaged before, but reading through the report, it seems to be that it's working actually a lot better than anyone anticipated. So all power to the staff that work in both the Pennycook and the Dalkeith units.
Mary.
Interestingly, the inspection didn't comment on that because it's not residential care, and it's disappointing to note they haven't even put in the report, innovative work is going on in Dalkeith, using Dalkeith House in a different way. But as they said, that's not within their jurisdiction. So it's quite interesting to note the nuances, within the report. We have submitted further information, so it looks as if there might be an inspection again of the service quite soon. And just to note, there is a new manager in post.
The point you just made there, is that something that we'd be drawn to the care inspectorate's attention prior to them publishing the final version of the report? Or do you get that opportunity in these circumstances?
Yeah, what happens is you get your initial feedback at the time, and then they give you the report, and then you've got 2 weeks to comment. And we did raise it with them, but as they said, that's not within their jurisdiction. But even a sentence could have said, there's innovative work going on using Dalkeith House in a different way, of which we can't report on, but that's not what happened. So,
any other questions or comments? Okay, are members happy to note the report, acknowledge the positive and ongoing work by management, staff and young people, and note that the Council will continue to challenge, support and monitor the service in relation to young children? Agreed? Okay, thank you. Mary, I think you're hogging a flare today. Item 6 is an inspection of Midlothian Adoption Services.
This is an announced inspection of the adoption service, and as you can see, from last year, there have been improvements. We took the adoption service into Midlothian. If you remember, 2 years ago, we used to subcontract it out. We've now brought it into Midlothian. And the inspectors found that the quality of care and support was good, the quality of staffing was good, and the quality of management leadership was adequate. Now, you'll recall, last year, we had the adoption service. The report wasn't as good as the fostering service, and we've discussed this in the chambers quite a lot, how two services can take part at the same time and have different outcomes. And this adequate is because in the next report, our fostering service, we had an area that was weak that I'll talk about. So they decided, because we had discussed it here before, that they would assess the whole service. So we got an adequate for that. The care inspectors noted the significant improvement in planning for children in need, the development of the framework for permanence, so that's when a youngster goes for adoption, the whole pathway of permanence planning, structural changes in staff training, and the quality of support that the adopters got, strong working relationships within the team, and the council committed to finding families for children. So all of that was very positive. The areas for improvement were more effective communication with adopters concerning delays in the legal process. So sometimes the delays are not to do with the authority, it's to do with a legal impediment that's holding it, but they felt that we could actually improve that a bit better, trying to explain it more fully to the adopters. Improved oversight of children in need of adoption and the likelihood of placing children, and regular visits from the social worker and all children being placed for adoption have a post-adoption plan. So you're invited to note the content of the inspection report, pass the report to performance review and scrutiny, and note that the council will continue to challenge, support and monitor the service.
Throw on for questions or comments. Jim?
Just a wee thing, I noticed on a few of these papers, Mary, it's got announced inspection at the top, but further down it talks about unannounced inspections, and it's the same in, I think, the paper further on there, which kind of confused me when I was reading it. In terms of the improvements that they're asking for, I mean, we spoke a minute ago about the preventative work that's being done in Dalkeith. Is there anything that can be done in this sort of area as well? With adoption, are we too far down the road to do anything proactive there in terms of avoiding children and being into that situation, or is it all covered by the same sort of thing?
I mean, we do a lot of preventative work in Midlothian to try to prevent youngsters coming into the care system. So when a youngster comes into care, you twin track immediately. So is this youngster able to go back to their family home? In which case, what work do we need to do? And is it unlikely this child will go back to their home? In which case, what work do we need to do? So we always look at family carers, kinship carers, all of that work, who would be most able to look after the child. So there's always, the twin track when a child comes in. They shouldn't come in to care and just linger there. There should always be the plan of where the youngsters are going. So we hold regular meetings with the team leaders to say, what's happening with the children in your area. And our legal team are hugely supportive in helping us drive forward improvements. So I have to say, the support that we've had from our legal team, including Vlad, has made a difference, and the inspectors noted that.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, are members happy to note the recommendations? Agree? Okay, thank you. Move on to item 7, inspection of Midlothian Council Fostering Services again, Mary.
So this report took place at the same time. And the report, the inspection was going very well until they noted a discrepancy, a procedural error. I can't discuss it here because it was in a fostering case, so the child or the adoptive fostering family could be identified. It's been reported in the press prior to this, so we have discussed it. So we made a procedural error with regards to a child, and therefore the quality of care and support was graded as weak. We did challenge the inspector on that and said we felt they were being a bit harsh because the child wasn't put at risk, the foster carers weren't put at risk, we had made an error, but they said no, we had breached a part of the Act, therefore it was weak. As you can see, the quality of the staffing was good, and then that automatically downgraded the quality of our management and leadership. You see that they noted the use of chronologies is in line with best practice. The training calendar, they noted, has been good. Foster carers told us they were happy with the work so far. Good working links. The young person said, you know, they were really happy in their placement. A biannual review in line with regulations, specialised administration staff. So we had done everything over the previous year really to improve the service. And then it comes on to the bit about the risk assessment tool needs to identify all risks, as I say, the procedural error, more robust approval systems be put in place, and where there have been significant concerns or incidents, the service needs to ensure appropriate processes for decision-making are followed. Now, at the time, we challenged the Care Inspectorate about being downgraded, and they were very clear with us, no, you breached a regulation, but we did say we would like you to come back and inspect the service quickly to show that, you know, this was a procedural error. And just as an update, the inspectors came in last Tuesday for 2 days to look at the system, but actually only stayed one day. They were happy with what they found last week, and they will report back to us. They did give us feedback, but we can't discuss it here, but they're happy with what they found, so we will be upgraded. So you're asked to note that the content of the inspection report passed this report to performance review and scrutiny, and we will continue to challenge and support and monitor the service. Also to say a new team leader has been appointed on a permanent position in this post as well. So lots of really good things happening.
Thanks, Mary. Questions? Ian?
Thanks, Derek. Under 2.7, it says, on page 32, it says, where there have been significant concerns or incidents, the service needs to ensure that appropriate processes for decision-making are followed. I find that recommendation quite vague. You know, what do we mean by significant? What do we mean by appropriate? Do we have something in place which explicitly says what we're supposed to do and in what circumstances?
There are very clear guidance for reporting. So if a child, if a foster child has been on holiday and they've been injured, you contact the Care Inspectorate. If a child has made an allegation against a foster carer, you contact the Care Inspectorate. There's a whole list of procedures that we need to follow. And the one that we did, we informed the Care Inspectorate of an action we were going to take. So we discussed an action we were going to take. Then on further review and further risk assessment, we decided not to take that action. But we didn't inform the Care Inspectorate. So when they came back, they were still working on the first action. So there's very clear procedural errors and very clear lines of management. So what the team leader's responsible for, what a service manager's responsible for, what a head of service is responsible for, very, very clear. So that was a bit about the procedural error. That's a bit that bring it to attention.
Russell.
Yeah, just ask the director. I mean, it's related, but it's not. As a result of the Rotherham inquiry, are you expecting any more regulation to come in? I suppose it's Pan-Scotland, but in particular, I'm all interested in Midlothian. Are you expecting anything else to come in to look for safeguards, etc.? In other words, another lot of hoops that you've got to jump through before you would actually do placements, for example? And I'm thinking about the foster home site because that actually came up in the inquiry.
I mean, that's something that we will be looking at and learning from. You will note, I don't know if you saw the press at the weekend, we're talking about Glasgow and their decision not to go to significant case reviews because there's other things that are going on. So any time that we would go to a significant case review, it's always discussed as a multi-agency grouping. What evidence do we have, what agencies are involved, what if you're saying no to a significant case review, what would the reasons for that be? And in terms of protecting our foster carers and our children who are with foster carers, that's part of what they're saying about the risk assessment. We need to be more robust. and thinking about if you have a child who persistently absconds, what does that mean? If you have a child that persistently makes allegations, what does that mean? I think historically, in the past, as you'll see from Rotherham, maybe children have made allegations and they've not been listened to. And part of the work that we do is we listen to youngsters, we engage with an external agency, to Who Cares Scotland, to go in and meet our children in foster care, to go in and meet our children in residential care. They have access to that child, without adults being around. So, you know, that's the work that we do. We also have the Corporate Parenting Board, and we've got young people there who are telling us various things, and, you know, we're acting on that. So whilst I say we've got a robust system, you're one phone call away from, you know, a child who's been harmed. So just to sort of say that the big risk that we have in Midlothian at the moment is youngsters who are using legal highs and then moving on to other drugs. So we have a multi-agency group looking at that at the moment, because people were saying, this child needs to go into care, they need to go into residential care, they need to go into wherever. Yeah, but what's happening with the community? What's happening is the community addressing this issue. So that's our big thing at the moment, young children being pulled into either accessing drugs, delivering drugs, and then that's leading on to other things. So that's our big concern at the moment.
Any other members? Any comments or questions? It's maybe worth just saying that it was quite surprising to see such a low grade when you actually read what the inspection team found when they went in there, and if you actually note what the inspection team in 2.6 are saying that they found that they went in there. And I always get the idea, if the kids are saying that they think they're well supported, the foster carers say they're well supported, then the reality is it really up for book stickers to say that they're not well supported? When you take foster carers in there, and I'll stand corrected if I'm wrong, you have the foster child has their own social worker where they can talk to, the foster parents have a different social worker that they can talk to, and the natural parents also have a social worker that supports and they can talk to. So there's a three-way check and balance system there that works quite well, and when you look doing that, it's quite disappointing that you see something there for a technicality get such a low grade. However, I suppose when it comes to children's services, we need to get everything right, and hopefully we'll learn from that. And I think Mary's quite rightly says they've been invited back in for a couple of days to look, and they've stayed a day and they're happy and they've gone. So I think that should give some reassurance. With that, can we agree to note the report, note the work continuing, and note the council's endeavours? Okay. Thank you, and thank you, Mary. We move on to item 8, is the LED street lighting update. John?
Thanks, Chair. The June committee requested details of the Council's LED street lighting programme. And in the report we've prepared, in Section 2 we've provided background and details. The resources are outlined in Section 3, and we've put out recommendations in Section 5. My recollection of the June committee was members may have one or two questions and clarifications they wish to seek, and I've taken the indulgence of inviting my colleague Keith Slate along to answer any technical questions you may have. Thanks, Chair.
Russell.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Just if I could just ask a question on 2.3. It talks in terms of it's an 8-year payback period, and I understand that, and that's the criteria that's set down, but it then goes on to say, however, there are significant numbers of lanterns within Midlothian where the payback would be considerably longer. Could I just maybe have an expansion on that statement? Because, at first sight, I don't understand it. And, if you do the techie stuff, I'll maybe still probably not understand it, Keith, but nevertheless, at least it'll be explained.
I'll try my best, Russell. The payback period is a calculation that's based on the existing energy consumption based on the new energy consumption. And the difference between the old and the new, based on and what you add into that, is the cost of the proposed lantern that you want to change. It does a calculation for you, right? And then it estimates, because of the bigger saving you make in energy, payback is shorter, right? So basically what we're saying in the report is that on the higher wattage lanterns, I can bring the payback down shorter. On the lower wattage lanterns, let's say the old 35, that's old Soxies, old Orange lights, right? To replace them, I can replace them with a lower wattage energy LED lantern. But specifically, I'm not saving as much energy consumption because we've also stated in there about that on some lighting, I can save two-thirds energy consumption and still provide the lighting that's required, the standard lighting. But in the smaller, let's say, residential areas, I don't make as much saving, and hence there's no the buy-in for like say what we identified in Salex to go down that route, because the payback's too extensive. So it goes beyond 8 years, and within the Salex funding you've got to have a payback within the 8 years. Hope that explains it.
No, thanks for that. I understand that. Now the supplementary is, what kind of percentages are we talking about, Keith? In general terms, about that kind of the low-level payback, so to speak, which, again, I know it's at the end of the journey, but nevertheless, it's something that we would strive to get everything changed out, but obviously there's a cost to changing that out as well. It's just looking at percentages.
If you're talking about percentages in relation to the difference between the higher wattage and the lower wattage, what we've got, and I would say, is that three quarters of my lighting stock will be residential, right? So basically, on let's say the main roads, the A-class roads, where I've identified 525 lanterns to be changed, that'll take me away from every 250 watt sawn metal halide lantern out of Midlothian. So I take that away, and I replace that with an LED. So I make my two-thirds saving on that, on energy and carbon savings. And then as part of my capital investment that the council's invested in me, I'm replacing the columns, and at the same time, I'm replacing the LED lantern in residential areas.
Joe?
Yeah. I'm delighted to see this coming forward now, for obvious reasons. I've been pushing that we use LEDs all over the buildings that we have in Midlothian as well, but it's nice to see it coming in the streets. It would have been good to see, because you've only, as a comparison, the 90-watt sons. But as you said, it would have been easier, I think, for the members to understand if you'd included the 250-watt, 350-watt high-pressure sodiums that are in some of the street lamps,
okay.
Because you'll get a quicker payback on the energy used on these things. So, yeah, I'm delighted to see this convener, and I look forward to when we get the LEDs throughout the whole of the buildings in Midlothian.
Margot.
Thanks, Chair. I also look forward to seeing LED lights in the whole of Midlothian. Given that you're having to pay back loans, etc., do you envisage when you think the whole of Midlothian will be complete, or will it be in my lifetime?
Margot, I think that based on existing funding, if the council continues to fund in, I would reckon that potentially in the next 10 years. And I think that what we have to look for, and this is the thing, is that it's street lighting's ever evolving, and because of the high energy prices, the cost that's coming for the DNOs, that's the suppliers of energy, we within the light fraternity are looking for even bigger changes. I mean, potentially, I think within the next 10 years, somebody should be able to come along to me and say, Keith, there's a solar panel, stick that on top of your lantern and deal away with your electricity supply. So I think that's the area we're moving into. And I know that there is for my suppliers, they're always looking for areas to trial. I have, where was it now? In a village in your area where I tried solar and wind power generation, and that's it. And that wasn't very successful. But I went and looked at trials in England where they're now proposing to put solar panels on street lighting columns. But what they're not finding yet is that they can't get the output that's required to potentially give you the light output that you're really looking for. Because what I have got to look for is that if I change this light source, because, as I say, it's all right to change this orange light socks, to white, pure white light. When I change an area that's SON or prior to LED was Cosmopolis, right, which you've got in some of your area, we've went Cosmopolis, we've got SON, Cosmopolis and LED. What I've got to make sure is that I'm allowed by the standards to come down one light level, right, but I've got to look for the uniformity. So I didn't leave anybody and darkness, basically, like making it look patchy. Now, LED lighting gives you that because the background, and I've got to be more technical in this chair, is that LED is driven at 350 milliamps in lighting, 550 milliamps or 750 milliamps. So it gives us the opportunity to set up an area at 350 milliamps, so it'll take that amount of energy to run the amount of lights. But if there's incidents or the police report or anything like that where there's areas of concern, whatever, I can go in and ramp that up to produce a higher lighting level. So basically you could have a street that's got 350 and at the end of the street maybe a cul-de-sac where there's situations happening at the weekends, we can ramp that lighting up and you can see that. And also I'm trying to introduce, well I have introduced this year, is a dimming scenario. So what I'm doing is I'm dimming the lighting between 12 and 6 in the morning by 30%. I'm only going 30% and then I want to trial that and look to even dim further. And again, making more energy and carbon savings.
Ian.
Thanks, Derek. Yeah, it's very encouraging. I would like to have seen a more ambitious plan, but I don't think it's for you to answer that one. Just a couple of questions. Firstly, you mentioned the carbon savings. I was surprised there wasn't even a reference to that in here. Just wondering what kind of impact the programme is making on our carbon savings, on our carbon reduction commitment. The other question I was going to ask was you're talking there about dimming lights at certain times of the day. I've still noticed in one or two places where street lights, because of a problem, have been on during the day. Just wondering how many of our lamps are actually triggered by the ambient light when the sun goes down, the lights come on because of that rather than because of a timing mechanism, and whether all the new ones would be triggered by that rather than by a timing mechanism.
In relation to the carbon, potentially I'm half on the carbon energy, carbon savings or whatever lighting is there. So when I put an LED lighting, I'm half on the carbon. I can't put an exact figure on that because I've stopped with the calculations, but I can get that to you. In relation to the lighting's operational during the day, that potentially could be due to my maintenance guys going and doing some maintenance. It could also be that the clock has failed. I've not went down the route. Well, I'm actually changing now. I'm looking at the photoelectric cell. We in Midlothian made that decision about 10, 15 years ago to move away from photoelectric cells because of the vandalism scenario. A lot of the photocells were getting vandalised and hence leaving it. Because when a photocell fails, it fails to save, so the lights come on and burn. We don't get charged for that during the day because I get set the budget figures by the energy companies in relation to dusk to dawn lighting. And what I do in my inventory details, I identify that through the inventory details about the lamps and the burning consumption of that individual lamp. And also included in there where I've identified dimming and trimming, that identifies in there and they do their calculation and come back to me on that. I can't remember your last point, sorry.
It was just if there are any new lights that are being installed would be triggered by the ambient light rather than by timing mechanisms.
Any new lighting on resident and on new developments, I still think we're, as I say, I'm looking to make that change, trialling it again using the photoelectric cell rather as a time clock. My existing lighting, where I'm making the lantern changes, the change I'm making there is changing the lighting column. I'm keeping the same electrical service. The majority of that is the Scottish Power Fifth Core network. That's an underground cable network that Scottish Power provide for us. We did in the past, used to, when we were doing a capital replacement programme, we would replace the existing Fifth Core by our own network. But I've kind of moved away from that because of the costs. And basically, I think Midlothian Council needs, and that's what I've got the monies for, is the state of the existing lighting column network. They're ready to fall down, so basically that's why I'm in a hurry to get money for the council to replace them, because then that cost would be astronomical if they ever came down. So But yes, I think in the future, and I think also to identify is that I'm now looking to identify a CMS system. I'm going to trial this in a few developments that's coming on board. That's basically a management system where you can operate the lighting from your PC, and it's triggered through the airwaves, and it's, you know, about this iCloud, so it all talks to that, it talks to that, it talks to the lighting. And again, it's where I mentioned earlier about physically I would have to go and revamp these ones that's got 350mm up to 550, up to 750, but now with the CMS system I can do it at a PC. So basically just ramp it up to suit the condition that's required for that on the day. So as I say, it's ever evolving. It's coming thick and fast, and it's trying to keep the pace with it. But I think, as I've always said, I like to try and keep myself up there as number one. I mean, we were the first in Scotland to trial LED lighting. So that's where we're at.
Any other questions? Okay, for my part, I must be the kind of dumb one, because I can see everybody nodding when you're getting all these different types of lights and switches and that, and I've got to be quite frank here, I'm kind of baffled. The report, I'm afraid to say, hang on a second. The report seems to baffle me a wee bit, and that's more on the financing of the lighting and how we're getting that. I'm looking at area 2.1 and the second paragraph. We talk about having replaced 915 lights and made a saving of £11,500. That's effectively just under £13 a light, which gives a payback over 8 years of £104. Now, I'm not a mathematician, but I can guarantee you we're not reinstalling the lights at £104. So how is there an eight-year payback? Or is the council's contribution to each of these lights less than £104?
I'm not a financier either, Derek, but the situation being is that you're absolutely correct, the payback's eight. The financial saving, and that's what I tried to identify earlier, is the financial saving isn't as high specifically in the lower wattage lamps. That figure there is for the lower watt, the residential area that I've got capital funding for by the council. The biggest saving, that's purely financial saving, Derek. I've not included, or what's not been included in that, is a saving a bit on the maintenance side, because all I have to do now in relation to the lighting at the present moment in time, with the new lighting coming on board, is I have to do an electrical test and inspection every 5-6 years. That light potentially should burn for approximately 100,000 burning hours, which is potentially 20 years. So there is, I see where you're coming from, but that figure there purely talks about the financial saving. That's no, I didn't maintain that light.
I'm sorry, Keith, that answer still not got me satisfied on the finances here. This quite clearly says, but we're saying £11,500 for 915 lanterns, which is less than £104 a year. I think it's just actually £99 odds. But going at that at £13 per lantern, if we're then factoring in saving in revenue costs for maintenance and that I would have thought would have been added to that. But the reality is at the moment I can see that we're putting in, and I've got to say that I would have thought, can you tell me how much it costs us to put in one of these lights? Because I thought you would certainly be talking in excess of £1,000, no, around £100. And if it is, I get really baffled as to how we're saving money over an eight-year period. I can see where we're saving the money on the burn cost, but I can't see how we could possibly be saving any money on the capital cost. I would think that has to be costing us money, because if it's no, we would quite simply immediately go out and borrow money, renew the whole lot of them, and it would all be paid for in 8 years, and then we would have a saving for now on. So I would need to get clear what the savings are, what the payback time is in reality for these lights.
Chair, it may help the committee if I come back to a following meeting with an actual explanation and detail behind the calculation, because I don't have it to hand, if that would be helpful for yourself and the committee.
Certainly, I thought that's what we were asking this report for, was to try and figure out, because at the last meeting we had, it wasn't clear to me and I think one or two others, as to if we're saving money over 8 years, why we quite simply, if we could do that on every other basis, we'd immediately invest. Because after 8 years, you're actually then making a saving. The council would cut its revenue budget massively, but by investing like that, and the normal investment time the council, I think, looks for a return is 25 years to make it affordable. So I actually thought this is what this is for, but it's quite clear to me that we're actually saving, on the figures here, at 915 lanterns, we've saved £11,500. That's less than £13 per lantern. Over an 8-year period, it's less than £104. And to install one of these lights, I'm sure the figure I was dealt some years ago was over £1,000. So I actually can't see, even if you want to add revenue and replacement and all that into that, that can't possibly add up.
I think it'd be handy if we were, or helpful if we could be told that the price of the lamp heads and the lamps themselves, because I take it you're just removing the old lamp heads from the lamp posts and replacing them with a new LED fitting and the lamp, and the cost of the lamps, the LED lamps, against the cost of the high pressure sodiums, and then we can work out ourselves what the wattage savings are over the period.
The 915 lanterns that is spoken about, Derek, is the column replacement programme that was done. It started in 2013, and as part of that column replacement, that was what the capital funding was. As part of that capital replacement, the council allowed me to replace the lantern as well at the same time. So that 2013-14 figure should be actually halved, because I replace roughly about just over 400 per year with the amount of monies that the council gives me for capital column replacements. So I think that 11,500 should basically be for half the amount of columns, half the amount of lanterns. So I would say for the energy savings that I'm making on half the 915 is about £11,500.
I'm just getting even more confused now, because I'm not getting an answer to balance this. I think we are going to need, or certainly I'm going to need, I don't know how other members feel, but certainly for myself, I would like sent the details as to how we're working this out, because I just can't see how this works. Ian?
Thanks, Terry. I agree, it's very confusing. Anything to do with finance in the council, I find confusing. I don't know about anybody else. What might be useful is to see a comparison. if we could see a comparison of costs, revenue and capital for a standard light and one of the new ones, year on year over, say, 20 years. Because when we say, for example, it's 8-year payback, I don't know whether this Salix borrowing insists that we actually pay back the loan in 8 years, or whether just the 8-year payback is used for comparison purposes. And if it's the standard 20-25 year payback, then it could be that we don't pay, get very little return for the first 8 years, then get a lot of return afterwards. It could be that that's spread over a longer period, and maybe that's where some of these figures are coming from.
No, the paper's quite clear. It is an 8-year payback, so what they're saying is we break even and it pays for itself over 8 years. And that's where I'm getting to the problem here, is it's only getting back on the figures we've got here, less than £104. Even if we half it as we're there, you would actually go up to about £200, but the actual reality is there are replacement of these, and I don't know the answer to that. A replacement of full column, I understand, is well over £1,000. I would have thought the replacement of just even a head would be certainly in excess of a couple of £100. So I think we really need to get some of the details of this back. Is there anybody else in here? You in the dark? Oh, sorry, I can't shine a light. Okay, John, can we have a mere detail? do we want that as a further report, or do we want it circulated? But I thought a further report would be helpful. Okay, can we have a further report to the next meeting, please? Okay, that's all the business we have in front of us. Thank you for your attendance.